Welcome to another episode of the Ignited Entrepreneurs Podcast. I'm Jessica, your host, and I invite you to join in and listen to a conversation with an amazing entrepreneur who has leaned into their passion and is igniting their life and the life of others. Welcome to another episode of Ignited Entrepreneurs. Today, I am really excited to have Jan Broders here. First of all, because I just learned that he has a secret rap talent, which he promises to tell the story of at the end of the show. But also because today we're going to cover off two questions. First one is, how can I live a successful life without compromising my health and happiness, which is something that I really want to know the answer to myself? And number two, how to grow your coaching business in an ethical way using his golden rules of ethical enrollment. Jan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you very much.
Yeah, this is going to be great. I'm really excited because I have a feeling this is going to get like real. Like we're going to get down to some really good nitty gritty stuff here today.
Yes, I hope we do.
Yeah. So before we get into all of that, can you please share who you are and what you do?
Yes. Yeah. So I feel like it's always, I love this question because to me, it actually has two parts, just like you say, okay, who you are and what you do. So my role, like the official role, what I do is I have a coaching consulting practice or business. Mainly my wife and I, we work together. We have a few freelance coaches who work with us whenever we need them. And we have three pillars really in our practice, what we do. One is we work with companies, maybe startup companies, but really large corporations as well, like Mercedes-Benz or Henkel, which is like a giant German company. We do mindfulness trainings with them, burnout prevention, stress management, and some leadership development as well. So that's the whole corporate side of what we do. Then we have normal one-on-one clients like you and I who want to improve their lives or want to reach certain goals. And then we have the third pillar is sort of like the academy, where we also mentor some other coaches, and we have like a mentor group or mastermind and work with other coaches. So those are the three things that we do in our coaching consulting business. And then who am I apart from all of that? I am a very enthusiastic father. We just had another baby 3 months ago, and we have a 5-year-old.
Congratulations.
So thank you very much. Yeah. So that's just very, very important to me. Like if you ask me who you are, that's probably the first thing I would say. I'm a husband and father. That's like number one. And then I try to change the world by offering coaching and consulting.
Beautiful. So how did you get to be, well, I love that this is a family thing, that you get to do this with your wife, especially because like you say, like that's the most important thing to you. And I love that you've been able to create that for yourself. But so how did that come about? How did you now become this person who works with such large corporations and does these academies? And I'd love to hear the story.
Yeah. So let me see like how far back I want to go. It's like, it's sort of like a long story, but it all started right after graduation from high school. I'm sitting at a party, like graduation type party thing, you know, like just, there's parties all the time because you have nothing else to do, no more school, not university yet or a job or so. So people just hang out. So I'm sitting there probably 3 a.m. in some garden and don't know what to do with my life. And this one guy who graduated a year before me says, "Well, Jan, what are you going to do after school?" I said, "I don't know. I'm just sitting here drinking beer and I don't know what to do with my life." And then he says, "Oh my God, you should work in hospitality, in hotel. I'm doing this training in hospitality. It's amazing. And I'm sure you'll love it." And because I had no idea what to do with my life, I really, like the next morning, hungover, I get on the internet and was still the really like meep, meep, meep connection type thing. And I applied to work in a hotel, like do an apprenticeship training, 3-year training in hospitality, because I had no idea what to do. So, okay, might as well do that. And so I got into the hotel business, started to really enjoy this. And yeah, I was really good at it, I guess, because at some point I ended up being in one of those high potential programs where you're supposed to become a general manager within a few years by the age of 30. And I was being promoted a lot there and having big projects and roles and whatnot. And I was 27 at the time. I'd worked in 9 countries already at the age of 27, and really thought, okay, my destiny, like my purpose in life, is to be a general manager of a 5-star hotel and see the world. And then one morning, as I'm going to the office, I was working in Czech Republic at the time, I'm already feeling not so well. It's like, oh my God, I'm really feeling, you know, my stomach doesn't feel well. I feel this tightness in my chest. And as I walk through this big, beautiful marble gold lobby, I'm physically collapsing in the middle of that place. And so that sort of was the end of that. So it was all quite dramatic in the moment. They called the ambulance, and I'm just laying there. Oh my God, what's happening? And I didn't speak Czech at the time, still don't, and so not really know what's going on. And but there was this really distinct moment that I love to share, is when it was saying, like, it's not like a conscious thought, it was just coming into my awareness, like, okay, Jan, either you're going to die right now, or you're going to change everything about your life, and both is better than what you're doing right now. And I said, oh wow, that's pretty heavy stuff. I wasn't aware I was doing so badly, and only at that moment I realized how shitty I was feeling, and how many things were going wrong. And even, you know, the weeks after, many colleagues asked, hey, what happened there? I heard you broke down and all. I said, yeah, I don't know. And they asked, didn't you see this coming? I said, no, really, I don't know. That was just out of nowhere. And but I had a lot of time to reflect afterwards, because I was in the clinic for 2 months and wasn't able to work for an entire year, recovering from that. And yes, there were so many symptom signs in the previous years that I just was never paying attention to. And I'm sure we'll get into the whole stress management, or like balancing success and stress in a little bit. But a lot of signs led up to that. But it really was the turning point of my life. And I got really, really interested in healing and coaching and all that, just for myself in the beginning. Because I was at the lowest point, you know, I couldn't work anymore. I had panic attacks all the time, couldn't be on the bus, couldn't drive a car, couldn't be in a supermarket. I was just panicking everywhere. And so I had to relearn everything and really rethink my life, and got really interested into healing and coaching. And after a few years, eventually people started approaching me, really a few years later only, because first I was only doing it for myself. But then people started approaching me and saying, well, Jan, you really turned your life around. Can you give me some advice? And that's when I noticed, oh, wow, this is a proper profession. And this might be cool to do, you know. And then I got trained and all that. Like that's when the whole second career, so to say, started. But this big breakdown was the turning point for me.
Yeah, my friend and I, we have a saying that I think she's the one who turned me on to it, is that the universe sends us messages first off as a feather, then it comes as a brick if you don't listen. And then if you really don't listen, you get the semi. And it sounds to me like you were not listening, so you got the semi.
Yeah, full on. Yeah, no, I hadn't been listening at all. No, it was ridiculous. Like now thinking back at the life I was living at the time, it's beyond me that I survived that for so long in terms of not breaking down earlier.
Yeah.
It was just insane.
And it's interesting that, I mean, all along you thought that you were doing well. You thought that you were on this amazing career path. And like you said, but 27, you'd already worked in 9 countries. And, you know, you probably thought, this is the life. Like, this is amazing. How did I accomplish this? Only to find out that it was like actually the worst thing that could have happened to you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I was so self-unaware at the time that only a few weeks before that happened, I was doing a workshop for colleagues on work-life balance and how important that was. And really thinking I had it figured out, and people sort of thinking, yeah, they thought I knew what I was talking about. And I feel that I did that.
Yeah. So I'm curious, like, before we move on, because I really want to get into, you know, how do we now cultivate this like work-life balance, like you were saying, but you know, if you were to pinpoint, if you could say one thing that you wish you had heard Like, what was the one thing that you think that in hindsight that you should have paid attention to? Just, you know, for people listening, like maybe they need to pay more attention for the signs as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I wish I had asked myself what I want. What do I want? Because as I said, from the beginning on, like this guy at the party at 3 a.m. said, well, why don't you go work in hotels? Okay, that's what I'll do. And I never asked myself if this is what I want to do. It was just, oh, okay, there is this program that you can do. And it's like the most prestigious one. Everybody admires the people who are in it. Okay, so that's what I do. But just because it was a cool thing to do, never really thinking about the consequences. And if this was the life I wanted to live, I was like, okay, yeah, sounds cool. And so I wish I'd asked myself, really, okay, what do I want in all of this? Apart from just catering to the expectations or the sort of prestige or doing certain things. And actually, after this all happened, you know, I went through therapy and like all that stuff. And one of the therapists asked me, okay, so Mr. Broders, you know, it was like all formal. What is your favorite tree? And at the time I thought, oh man, what have I got myself into? It? I mean, it's not bad enough to break down. Now you're sitting with this weirdo psycho here in this room and she's talking about trees. Thank God my insurance is paying for this. And then I didn't have an answer, right? And that was the weirdest thing. It's like, I don't know. I just said anything like oak tree, love oak trees. They're amazing. But really, I had no idea. And that was just like an example for how little opinion really I had at the time of about life, about things that I liked or disliked. It was just always sort of going with what people thought was the best, what I thought got most recognition, right? Mm-hmm. And so I really encourage people to ask themselves, hey, what do you like? What do you want? As simple as, what's your favorite flower, your favorite tree? What clothes do you like? And I don't know, like just all those simple things, really. Asking those questions. I think that'd be an amazing start. And then just like if we really get into it, then the whole idea of, okay, you're able to observe your thoughts and not every thought is true. I think that would have helped me a lot. I had no idea those concepts existed. Which also in a way, like, I mean, now I could go on for hours, but it's scary that so many people working like in business, in the corporate world, they have never heard about those things, but they're leading maybe hundreds of people, or they're making huge decisions that impact the business world or the environment and a lot of people. And many people have never heard of those things. So now I think that's almost scary to think of.
Yeah, it really is actually.
Yeah.
Because that's okay. The thing quite often.
Please make choices over my life, Mr. Politician, who's never heard of any of those things. Yeah,
exactly. And that's the thing too, is like, yeah, like these people who are running these corporations, the people working for them, they just fall in line to, you know, kind of, they like, okay, how do I impress this person so that I can improve or, you know, move through the company? And so they're willing to do things that probably do not align with what they want, to your point, right?
Yeah, totally. And this is what we're seeing now with the work that we do, the people we work with who are working in the corporate space and who may be responsible for huge teams or so. And it's amazing. I'm not saying everybody, but many people who we work with totally not happy with what they're doing, or not really doing it by choice, but more like, okay, but that's what you do and everybody does it. And, oh, but really, I would love to have a family or whatever, but no, I need to finish this project. I need to fulfill my role here. So many people live that way.
Mm-hmm. When I was stalking you, because that's yes. What I do. One of the things that I found, I know, right?
Two weirdos on a call.
I love it already. was one of the things that I saw on your website is that being successful is not the same as being happy. And I think people don't get that.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like I get that they don't get it, because I live the same life, so to say, right? I'd never asked myself, okay, is it about being happy what you do? It was just about, okay, you know, like grinding, hustling, and maybe one day you'll be that have that position. You know, in my case, it was general manager of a five-star hotel. And then I probably hoped I would be happy then. So like the expectation, okay, that's when it all pays off. But really the path there isn't supposed to be joyful or anything. And also it's not really a question at all. It's just, okay, I want to be successful. That was my thing. And a fun thing was actually, to me, also because of what does success mean, right? At the time, to me, being successful really meant going to an office in a suit, you know, like a dress suit, proper suit with a tie and so like a briefcase or whatever. And that's like a successful person. That's what a successful person looks like. And that's what you do when you're successful. And again, not very, not very well reflected at that point. And when I broke down, it was like the tie that I had to take off because it was, I couldn't breathe. And I unbuttoned my shirt and I took those shoes off and I was like half naked laying on the floor. So obviously not consciously, but quite ironically, I had to take off my suit in order to breathe at the time.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, that's a great image.
That's beautiful right there.
Yeah.
It's a great metaphor, isn't it? That picture that you just painted, it's like,
yeah,
you know, that this version of success that I created required me to wear this uniform or this costume. And then for you to really find yourself, you literally had to take it off.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's, Yeah. And that's the idea of success, right? Like I find a really interesting question. I was like, okay, what does success mean? And I feel, again, one of the most valuable questions we can ask ourselves is, what does success mean to you? What is your very own definition of it? And the first idea that we usually have, just that's how it is in Western society, is we think about our business life, right? The professional life. That's where success happens, right? Success, automatically people think about business or your job. But it's never associated with your family life, for example, or your health. Or your social life, circle of friends. So, and I find it very valuable to also define success in areas of your life. So as I said earlier, okay, for me, family life, my children, my wife, very important to me. So what does success mean? How does a successful husband, Jan as a husband, Jan as a father look like? And I find that equally important, and we rarely ever ask those questions. So I'd love to invite everybody listening to reflect that and come up with ideas how success looks like in every area of your life, not only business.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. So if I was to ask you, yeah, Jan,
yes,
what is your definition of success?
Yeah, it's interesting. So to me, it's quite vague in the sense it's, okay, I want to be as close, like in German, I would say, I want to be as close to myself as possible. So when I'm there, then I'm successful. So I really, it's not 100% there at all times, obviously, because I'm also being distracted here and there and sort of, I don't, you know, on my own journey. But this to me, that's success. If I'm really, if I'm me, in anything that I do in my family, in business, and then I'm good. That's all I need. And like all the other things follow from there, in my experience.
Yeah, I have a similar thing. Like I have asked myself this question. I've redefined success for myself. I did it a couple of years ago. And for me, I used something called a 7 levels deep exercise. And it's just a process of asking basically the same question over and over and over again. But every time you do it, you just get deeper and deeper and deeper. And so for me, and it was based on values. You're always looking for a values word. And so for me, what came up was joy and freedom. And so now for me, everything I do is about joy. Like you and I having this conversation about, you know, what, you know, how you can help people and the experiences that you've been through. And like, this to me is a moment of bliss. This is how I want to spend my time, is interviewing amazing people. This is my idea of a good time. And it allows me to now run all my decisions, everything through that filter of joy, which I would imagine is what you now do as well, is that, you know, being as close to yourself as possible becomes your filter. It's like, you can ask yourself, is this thing, is this decision, is this choice going to bring me closer to that or not? And it's having that is like, it makes everything black and white. It makes everything in your life so much more simple to make decisions. I find that's been my experience. So
yeah, 100% to me as well. I often like to compare this idea, you say the filter, almost like a motto party, and it's like a theme party. You know, if you invite people, hey, we're gonna have an 80s party, or we are gonna have a, I don't know, Baywatch party. I don't know, like what type of party people have. Not sure that's happening like in November in Canada, Baywatch party, but maybe at the time of the year. So, and then, okay, if this was the motto, the theme was, okay, joy and freedom, or being really close to myself. Okay, what is happening during that party, right? During that, does it fit the theme or not? What we're doing? That's how I view it. And it's the same with the filter. Yeah. And
I love that.
Yeah, so that's really fun. I like how you phrase that. Yeah, and I feel many people just have never asked that question, and I feel it's very, very valuable. It just changes everything, 100%.
So when you're working with your clients, like say a big corporate client, are you asking the C-suite people, or are you asking, or are you working with the employees? Like, so like who is your clientele, and how do you have them learn who they are and what they want?
Yeah, so we have one program, and that's designed for, let's say, director level or so. So it'd be, it'd be somewhere below the board, but it's people who are moving away from the managerial thing of, okay, I'm managing people in terms of overseeing their work and correcting it in some sense or so, but more going into leadership. And it's a program we call Lead Like a Coach. So here we sort of teach them some basic ideas around coaching and how a coach would think, how a coach would approach a certain situation. And we believe that the best coaches are the most self-reflected coaches. So there we do a lot of that introspection. And it's all like the first few models, all about getting to know themselves and who they are and how they function, and how they function so far in terms of what patterns they've been following so far, and how they would want to, who they would want to be in the future. Not so much work related in the beginning, just life, right? And then, oh wow, but how does that transfer to your work? But that's one of the programs, for example, where we do that a lot. And the basis for all the leadership stuff that will follow is just the personal self-awareness and introspection.
Yeah, I like that. What you're doing is almost, you're bringing the people back to business.
Yeah. Yeah, it's right? It's funny. And when people say, okay, what do you do? You know, like blah, blah, consulting and or coaching. Oh, so you're like a business coach. It's like, yeah, I don't know. Not really, because I don't do strategy. I don't know how to run a successful car manufacturing business. I have no idea. That's not what I do, right? And still I'm able to work with them, but we're working with the people. It's only about the people. And our conviction is that that'll tremendously positively impact the business side as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, when you have happy people who know who they are and what they want working for you, I mean, that's got to be the best productivity hack there is.
Yeah, 100%. And it's, you know, like there are studies around this. So it's not only, okay, I hope it'll happen, but, you know, there's some studies around the whole mindfulness thing, okay, mindfulness programs in companies, and, you know, just simple things like, okay, turnover rate goes down, right? People don't quit their job as often. Okay, so like every person you have to replace costs, whatever, yearly or like an annual salary or something like this, right? So you'll quickly save a lot of money by a few people not quitting their job. Depending on the type of program, it often is enough if one person doesn't quit the job, then our program was worth it, right? So you can calculate it that way, people not leaving the company or being, I don't know, 10% more productive, blah blah, like those things. There actually is have some numbers to this as well.
Yeah, I did some research years ago, and the cost of replacing an employee is huge. Like the actual cost, like the time, the training, the it's almost, I think they say that it's close to a year's salary to actually replace that person, right?
So that's so if like a well-paid person leaves, that really sucks for the company.
That's a lot of money.
Exactly. So yes, and I believe, you know, it's okay, like if we go into like all this like this big term being thrown around at the moment, the great resignation, it was like, what was it, 300, no, that's not the right, well, whatever, like I don't want to throw the number, that's not correct, but the highest number of people who've ever quit their job was, I think, in August this year in the US. And, you know, there's like this war for talent and like all those buzzwords. And it'll be tougher for companies to find good people in the future. And maybe at the moment people say, oh my God, it's a pandemic. You know, I'm so happy I have a job. But if you're really well educated in one area, it should be really easy to find a job if you're sort of mobile and work in different places. At least in Germany, companies just looking for talented people. They just don't have enough workers. And it'll be really difficult for companies to hire people or to attract them. And I feel also this type of work could be one of the things to attract people. Say, hey, my God, applicant, we're caring about you, right? We have all these programs, we give you coaching, give you training, so it could be part of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Moving forward, yeah, it's no longer like, oh my God, I'm so glad I'm working for Apple, let's say. Yeah, but well, actually I find this really interesting. So if we quickly go there, like it's no longer like, oh my God, it's so cool to work for Google. I think like the newer generation, they're now Google, I'd rather start an Instagram account, right? It's not even, Google is competing with YouTube or something. It's like, no, you're competing with the idea of starting a business on your laptop, sitting in Bora Bora or Bali and living life, right? That's what a corporation is competing with today. And so you have to be really convincing to get somebody from a beach in Bora Bora to an office in Seattle or wherever the company is.
I don't even know if that's possible.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think companies are realizing that. They're still thinking, oh, we should, you know, Mercedes is competing with BMW. So it's like, no, you're competing with, I know, Amazon shops and online funnels and stuff like that. Because that's what people could be doing instead of working for your corporation for a salary.
Hey, Ignited Entrepreneurs. What you working on? Well, I know you're working on something, probably a new program, a course, book, maybe even a podcast. Well, I created exactly what you need to create, launch, and sell your new product. As a project manager for the last 15 years, I know exactly what it takes to successfully plan and complete a project. So I created the Idea to Launch in 90 Days Planner, available now on Amazon.
Yeah, and I think also through COVID, a lot of people, because they did lose their jobs, that a lot of businesses were started. And so now, you know, trying to recruit those people back from that, yeah, good luck.
yeah, exactly. So I'm really curious to see how this goes in the years to come. Yeah.
But I know for here in Canada, because we had our government did give people a decent amount of money every month to be able to get through COVID, that I found, like, I was doing a bit of traveling just locally through British Columbia here, and they were, some of the restaurants and hotels and places like that, like, just they could not staff because people were making more money on what here we call CERB than they would have working. And so businesses were really struggling to find those employees. That was, you know, it's almost, it did some damage to our economy here.
Yeah. And I'm seeing that because I'm still in touch with a lot of people in the hospitality space. And so I'm still passionate about it. I'm still really interested in it. And I still like nice hotels and good food and all that. So I'm seeing the same here as well. That also because everything was closed for so long, people would just, instead of working at a reception, I might as well work, I don't know, in a doctor's office at the desk or in a, I don't know, somewhere else, right? Get probably paid more, have like regular work hours. And I know it'll be open all the time and not closed down in a few months because of some restrictions. Yeah. And yeah, so hospitality industry really struggles finding talent at the moment. Yeah. Over here as well, mm-hmm. It's the same.
Yeah. So the other subject that we were going to talk about today. Yeah. And you kind of talked about it. So you mentioned in your program that you offer for leaders in corporations, was you talk about leading like a coach. And so I know that you also work with coaches.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, and again, this was like none of what I do happens by design, right? It's really, I think one of my big strength and one of the biggest weaknesses at the time, because it can be a little bit chaotic, but I don't think about things too much. And I guess I'm quite naive in some sense, but usually that helps me because I do stuff. Probably if I thought about it too much in the beginning, I probably wouldn't do certain things. Just like, for example, we traveled the world for 3 years. I would have never done that if I knew what happens on the road for 3 years, right? But we just, let's just go and we'll figure it out. So sometimes it just really helps me. Sometimes, okay, you'll learn along the way. But what I wanted to say was, just like with a normal coaching, I did it all for myself in the beginning. And then at some point people said, hey, can't you help me? Or can you share with me what worked for you? It was the same with the coaches, right? At some point, some coaches said, hey, Ann, I don't know, I'm doing this as well, and blah, blah, can you give me some advice? So I said, oh yeah, why not? Sure. And so we started to mentor coaches. It's not like our main thing. And I find it important to also have a proper coaching practice in that, work with companies, work with individuals. So, and not only work with coaches. Like for me personally, I find that important because I still want to grow in that area as well, in the normal coaching, so to say. And so one thing that we talk with coaches about, what we call ethical enrollment, right? I find it important when we sell as coaches to do that in an ethical and sort of maybe loving, mindful, mindful way, and not a weird, pushy type way. And so this is one of the big areas that we talk about and that I really love teaching about when I was talk to coaches.
Yeah, I mean, I could think of about 10 clients that I would love to send to you just based on the way that they send me these random Facebook messages. Do you know what I mean? Like, come on, seriously? Like, you need to learn a better way.
Yes, yeah, and I believe so too. And again, now sort of explaining this, like what I mean by that is too, I think, in the world of coaching, there's so many different professions, really. So there is maybe mentors or trainers or teachers who are creating content and then maybe creating an online course and people go through it. And, you know, that's the coaching business. But technically speaking, it's not so much coaching. It's more an education thing, right? Or training program, which is fine. I'm not saying one is better than the other, but it's different than coaching where you have a conversation with somebody. And you're not teaching anything. You're creating the space. You're asking, hopefully, somewhat interesting, empowering, heart-opening questions or whatever. But you're not teaching them so much, right? And I think that's a totally different industry, totally different business than the whole Facebook ads, online courses stuff. That it's something very different. And when we speak about the selling side on the coaches side and the coaching side, I feel, you know, acquiring clients for coaching really always has to be done through coaching, in my opinion. So we never think about sales conversations. Oh, this is a sales conversations. And then hopefully one day we'll start coaching. But to us, it's always coaching. So whatever conversation we have with the person, I go in there with a mindset of a coach, because that's what I do. That's my thing. And so if I approach a sales conversation with a mindset of coaching, then I don't care about the outcome, right? So just like a coaching conversation, you know, we're speaking, oh, I'm not sure, maybe I should move to Toronto. I'm not sure if I want to stay in Vancouver or whatever. And then I don't care where you live, right? We can have the conversation and I hope you find an answer that works for you. But I'm not secretly trying to manipulate you into moving to Toronto because, I don't know, I love Toronto or something. I don't care. And I mean that in a very respectful, loving way. And the same in the sales conversation, I don't care. I, as a coach, I shouldn't be caring about this person saying yes or no. I need to be detached from the outcome. And the question really that a person comes with in that sales conversation is, oh, do I want to work with this coach or not? Is this a good fit or not? And as a coach, okay, let's find out. How do you want to find out? Blah, blah, blah. Do like the whole coaching thing. But it's not me trying to force the person into buying what I do. That's not what a coach does. So that's, I think that's the general mindset, how we approach enrollment is through the eyes, through the lens of a coach.
I like that. I actually went to your website and downloaded your golden rules of ethical enrollment. And I was going through them. And the one that jumped out at me was number 4. And it says, show up to serve and not to please.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you explain what that means to you?
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, so on my website, if somebody's interested in this, it's you'll see it in the menu bar up there. I think it's for coaches or so. That's what it says. And then you can download this.
Yeah. I'd like to say something really quickly about this as well is, you know, a lot of times you have these like lead magnets where people say, oh yeah, download my, you know, 10 tips for blah, blah, blah. And it's like literally, you know, a little checklist with 10 little lines. No, this is 31 pages, people. This is in depth. This is worth your time.
download the Bible, if you will.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's like a proper book almost. So show up to serve, not to please. I feel, again, this is maybe traditional salesperson, so like how you would picture like a salesperson would be pleasing, right? It's like a real estate salesperson, maybe, or car salesperson. It's like, oh my god, yeah, just like trying to be really nice and just saying things that the person wants to hear, and then they hope this person buys from them, right? Like, this is the how many people do that. But if we don't please but we serve, we don't just say things that people like to hear. You might also be asking tough questions. You might be saying things the person maybe needs to hear but doesn't want to hear. If you ask permission to do that, but and then you can do that. It's not about the person liking you, but you being of service, helping the person. And I think that's two totally different things. And again, it has so much to do with detachment, in the sense, okay, I don't care about the outcome. And I don't care about whether or not the person likes me. And so they don't hire you because you're nice, but because they gain value from the conversation, because it helps them in some way, but not because, oh my God, Jan is so nice, let me work with him. I don't want people to book me for me being nice. And so we as coaches need to, you know, take ourselves out of the way. It's almost like removing ourselves out of this path, and then the client can walk. And this is a tough thing to do, I think. Like, for me personally, that's probably the most challenging one, to be okay with a person not liking you. But I feel that's very important if you really want to serve them.
Yeah, I guess, because sometimes as a coach, you're going to say something that is going to hit a nerve, right? And you're going to force them to look in the mirror at something they don't want to look at. So, you know, if you go into coaching thinking, oh, I'm just going to be nice and they're going to love me and we're going to get lots accomplished, I think if you're not asking those hard questions, then you're really not serving them at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And then otherwise it's more like a friendly thing, right? And then what's the difference between two friends having a conversation and, you know, over wine or so, and a coaching conversation? There's a difference. And why is the one powerful and potentially life-changing, and the other was a nice night? It was nice hanging out with Andrea, whoever. Well,
it's funny you say that, because like you were saying, is that as you started to change and develop and, you know, improve your personal life and whatnot, that people started to notice, and they would come to you and say, hey Jan, can you teach me, you know, how you did this? And so, because I'm also a coach, I find that people come to me for, you know, they come and they talk to me about different things than they would talk to, say, another friend, because I see the world differently. Mm-hmm. And I always have to ask them, okay, am I your coach or your friend?
Yeah.
Which answer do you want? Because they're going to be really different, right? I can empathize and sympathize and commiserate with you if you want, like you say, a glass of wine, and let's just have a little pity party or a bitch session, or we can get into it and we can really get some work done, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like when the boyfriend leaves us, he was an asshole anyway, you know, and then maybe that's what you say is a best friend, right? That's what expected. And maybe that's your role, right? That's as a coach, obviously not. You're like,
exactly.
It's not so much you shouldn't say, oh, I don't care if he leaves or not. Well, I still have compassion, but it's not, I'm not there to, speak badly about that person leaving. Yeah, exactly.
Different conversations. Yeah, different conversation.
Yeah. So I really feel like, again, the whole serving versus pleasing, I think it's huge. And again, coming back to what you said earlier with the filter, or I called it a theme party or the motto thing. I think that's a big change if we start to approach everything we do in business. Okay, is this actually coming from a place of service or pleasing? You know, like how I write to people, how I talk, what I do in general in business, I don't know, social media or not, or all those things. Is this just because I'm pleasing, or is this actually of service to people? And that'll change so much.
Mm-hmm. So is there one on that list that's your favorite that you'd like to share before we move on?
Yeah. So I think one that is really will have such a big impact on any coaches, consultants listening is the one, make time, like dedicate extra time for the enrollment conversation. And it's such an important conversation to be had. It's not done in the last 5 minutes of a intro call or things like that. Just like squeezing it in, like the pitch. Oh, and by the way, you know, if you want to work with me, then it's blah, blah, blah. It's 10 euros for 6 months or whatever. Hopefully not. It's or if
unless
so let me know, let me know where to sign up
since I checked.
so it's, I think that to me, if people apply that rule, that usually has a big effect right away, like scheduling a different conversation, and then everybody knows, okay, today we're speaking about potentially enrolling with a coach. Okay, that's the topic for today. And it's a totally different conversation. You know, both parties sort of enter with that mindset and with that idea and with the awareness, okay, this is what it's about. And you have space to talk about it. You schedule an hour or two, however long you think feels good. It's not rushed, and you can really dive deep and reflect and question certain things or not. I think that's a game changer for everybody being in that space in coaching and consulting.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel manipulative that way either. It's not like I'm just asking you questions to get to know you so that I can kind of use it against you later.
yeah, exactly. And I think it's, and then if somebody doesn't want to have that conversation, like, okay, let's not have that conversation. But I think it's, and honestly, I've had several enrollment conversations where both the potential client and I were in tears because it was such a beautiful, deep conversation that we had and felt so connected. And I feel, yeah, that's not happening during a conventional sales conversation. People are not in tears, maybe because they want to run away or so, but it's not tears of being moved and joy and, oh my God, this is a beautiful conversation. And I think that's a lot nicer to have those types of conversations.
Absolutely. I mean, even if that person doesn't choose to hire you right away, they're going to be left with that amazing feeling. They're probably going to refer people to you that may become clients. And if and when they are ready, they'll be back.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I've experienced that as well. Yeah. People just like after a while, oh, you know, now is the right time, or, you know, now I have the finances right in order to do it, or sending somebody, like you say, yeah, those things. Just this week, I was speaking with somebody who I really, really liked, and I told him, well, I personally would love to work with you. I mean, this is amazing. It's not about me, so we spoke about it, and for him, it's just not the right time. There's some parts missing, like in the commitment of part of it. And I told him, well, this whenever that is there, whenever you feel it's there, then we can talk again and we'll see. Maybe one day it's there, maybe one day not, but it felt a lot nicer to not accept them, and not push them into signing up or something. And I'm sure something nice still will come out of it in one way or another.
Mm-hmm. No, I believe in that very much. So awesome. Yep. So, okay. So now back to, like, if somebody was now interested in connecting with you deeper, where would be the best place for them to learn more about you?
So my website, janbroders.com, is a good place. There's a like a contact form, or you can send a message to mail@janbroders.com. And I always start with having a conversation, you know, to speak about where somebody's at, what the situation is and what they hope to accomplish. And then we take it from there. So there's also no fixed programs that I do. We create the programs individually for the people and whatever they need. So we can talk about it and see what serves you most. Yeah. Wonderful. Speaking about service. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. So before I let you go, I have to ask one last question.
Yeah.
So Jan, if you were going to give somebody one piece of advice who was ready to take their business to the next level, what would you suggest?
Yeah. So the biggest advice I would give when you're asking that, I think to me is to actually do what you say you're going to do in terms of a coaches, a baker bakes, and a gardener gardens. So this is what you do. So if you want to get into coaching, then you need to coach. And it doesn't matter if you're paid for that for the first time, for the first, I know I offered 100 free sessions in the beginning, and I was just coaching. But it felt so good to live in that reality of, oh, wow, I'm a coach. I just had 70 conversations. I can call myself a coach. This is what I do. You know, every day I spend time on that. And again, I think that changes so much compared to, oh, first I'm working on this and that, I'm filling out this sheet and that sheet. And I'm, you know, like thinking about doing that one day, maybe that's not coaching. That's thinking about being a coach. And that's totally different. And you can still do those things, but parallel to that, you have to coach. And whether you think you're good enough or not, you'll get better along the way. But a coach coaches, and a accountant, I don't know, they account, whatever you're doing. Whatever you aspire to do that in the
right,
easiest, smallest possible form that you can do right away. You know, I really believe in that. You know, in the whole startup world, the whole MVP, minimal viable product thing, creating the smallest, easiest version of a product very quickly to test it. I really believe in that in the service industry as well. To do what you plan to do one day, do it now.
I love it. Yeah, I agree. Because a lot of times you can get, you know, bogged down with, oh, but I have to have a website first, and I have to this, and I have to that. And then you forget that, no, really, you just need to get out and do the thing you want to do.
Yeah, exactly. And then maybe you find out that you don't enjoy it at all, right? And just imagine you're spending half a year on building funnels and I don't know what else, like all that stuff you do and writing ads and testing them. And then you have a few
getting really good at Instagram posts and stuff. Yeah,
exactly. And then, oh my God, I hate coaching. I don't really like that. And yeah, because you've never tried it. So I've seen this too with people. It's like, oh my God, I'd rather do something else, because the idea of something might sound amazing. So I really encourage people to do that in the easiest form as quickly as possible.
Love it. Oh, this was fabulous. Thank you so much for spending, well, my Saturday morning and your Saturday evening, I suppose, with me.
You're very welcome. And did you want to hear my rap story still?
Oh, right. The rap story. I almost forgot. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no worries. So you said, asked me, should I be able to rap now? So and really, I'm horrible at it, but, well, I don't know if I'm horrible at it. I have this secret talent, and I used it in funny situations. So actually, when I was applying for one of the programs in hospitality, and it's like really hard to get in, we said, oh yeah, you go in front of those people, like very accomplished general managers and the regional VP, la la la, all those people. And they say, introduce yourself. And so then I don't even know how I came up with that idea. It was just there. I turned my jacket inside out, you know, and I rapped my whole intro to them, like who I was. And I don't know, they were just like, oh, okay. Why don't we take this guy? Because he'll probably be good for something, I'm sure. And
I
so this
love
is
it. Like,
so this was funny. This is where my passion for rap music really helped me. And really, you know,
so
I'm not amazing at it. I just it's almost like I just say a bunch of stuff that rhymes and that's it.
yeah. So is this a technique that you teach people?
Yeah. How to wrap your interview.
How to stand out like a boss.
Yeah, exactly. So
Oh, I love
yeah,
it.
that was
Oh,
quite
that's
funny.
awesome. I'm so glad I asked. So thank you so much. I'm glad I stalked you enough to
Yeah.
find out so we can share that story. That's
Yeah.
awesome. Oh,
Yes.
Jan, this was a blast. Thank you so much. And if you ever want to come back, you're
Yeah.
always welcome. We can dive deeper into anything that you'd like.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much. Yeah, I really enjoyed this too. And yeah, I hope it's valuable for the people listening as well.
Well, if not, I found it valuable, so that's
Okay,
enough for
that's
me.
exactly serving one
Yeah.
person a day.
Yep, exactly. You did your job for today. Thank you very much.
Amazing on a Saturday.
Awesome. Yeah, wonderful. Okay, well, thanks very
Cool.
much. Bye.
Thank you very much. All the best.